This is Jewish Board Talk with Cherise Zifford, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
Did you know that slavery was practiced as early as the Neolithic Revolution? It is unfathomable that it exists today, yet it does, and I quote, "It continues to be found in countries across Africa where it is still possible to own, buy and sell, capture and ransom, trade in and become rich from African slaves." This quote is from Martin Plaut, journalist, author, and academic specializing in conflict. His latest book, Unbroken Chains, A 5,000-Year History of African Enslavement, explores the phenomenon of slavery today. Born in Cape Town, exiled to Britain, Martin became British Labour Party's Africa Secretary, representing the party and the anti-apartheid movement. He also worked at the BBC World Service, including for a decade as Africa editor of BBC World News. Martin, I'm so pleased to have you. Thanks so much for joining me.
It's great to be with you.
Martin, what made you write this book?
It's a long story, but I'll give you a short version. I did a biography of Dr. Abdullah Abdurrahman, who is one of the most remarkable South Africans ever. He's the first person of color ever to be elected in South Africa in 1904. And he was on the City Council of Cape Town for 40 years. And he represented District 6, which a lot of people will know. And he was a remarkable man who knew Keir Hardy, the Labour Party leader. He knew Gandhi. He represented Indian interests in India, but he was also the grandson of a slave. And it occurred to me that I knew a lot about transatlantic slavery, but I never knew much about slaves who came from, say, the Indian Ocean. And as I began the looking into his history, I then discovered the whole vast history of slavery, which is far, far wider and deeper than just the transatlantic slave trade, all of which is true, I would add.
I mean, you talk about, slavery, the definition of slavery, as it were, and the way we think about it today, has it changed? And kind of the slavery that you're talking about in this book is actually like traditional slavery, if you know what I mean.
Exactly. It's what we call chattel slavery, where somebody is somebody's property that you can be bought and sold. Now, there are many other forms of terrible employment, of abuse and all the rest of it, low pay, people given starvation wages. They are not slaves. So I haven't used them and I haven't done the sort of modern slavery idiom. I'm looking at people who were genuinely slaves in the absolutely traditional sense, where you saw them wearing leg irons or, you know, what are called koffles, which are the chains around their necks. That's what I'm talking about.
You talk about five countries where there is still slavery, Mauritania, Mali, Niger, Libya, and Sudan. And you give it through to a combination of history, societal pressures, conflict, poverty, greed, and corruption. Can you explain exactly what is happening there?
Well, in these countries, each society, of course, has its own specificity, and you can't just lump Africa together as one place. I mean, in Mauritania, for example, it's very much traditional inherited slavery. In places like Niger, it's both inheritance and people who are actually captured. In places like Sudan, it is very often the product of war, particularly terrible war that's going on now, where, I mean, just to be brutally honest about it, it's Arabs who capture Africans and enslave them and force them to work for them. And in places like Libya, it tends to be people who have come across the Sahara Desert trying to escape from places like Eritrea, who either leave their bones in the Sahara or are captured when they get to Tripoli. And then if they don't have the ransom to pay for it, they're just put in a container and sold off, you know, to the highest bidder. And they're taken away and forced to work, or, you know, forced, frankly, to have sex.
It's so horrendous. And you'd think that this would have been abolished so many years ago. But you explore in your book reasons why this isn't the case. Do you want to go through some of those reasons?
Well, the problem is that You know, everybody has been in a state of extraordinary denial about it. Yes, what the Europeans did, what the you know, and the Americans did in capturing people is absolutely was and remains absolutely appalling. And we all know about the transatlantic slave trade because it has rightly been highlighted in films, in books, and all the rest of it. But if you look at places like Arabia, particularly Saudi Arabia, Oman, Yemen, people have been enslaved for hundreds, if not thousands of years. Particularly, they were Ethiopians and Somalis that were brought across there. I mean, literally sold by their own emperors or leaders for money. I mean, it was as simple as that. Sometimes they were captured in raids, sometimes they were not. And if you look at somewhere like Saudi Arabia, it was only in the 1960s that they actually even made it illegal to hold slaves. And in places like other parts of Arabia, it was only in the 1970s. Now, Saudi Arabia's reaction to all of this has been to close its archives. You cannot go and investigate the question of slavery. I mean, if you want to go and see what the Americans did, you can go into any of the archives. You want to go into Britain, you can do the same. But in Saudi Arabia, you can't. So they are in complete denial about this and do not want to discuss it in any shape, way, or form.
I mean, you talk about denial, but it's not. It's more than denial. It's there's something almost sinister taking place, or not. It's not that they don't say it's not happening. It's that they don't want you to know that it has happened, because they do know that it has happened and they're trying to cover it up.
I mean, that is absolutely true. Now, there are some extremely brave people. For example, in Niger, there's an organization called Timidria, which campaigns about current slavery. And I have met Ali Bazou, who is the president of the association, who was here in Britain last year. You get people like the UN's Tamayo Okobo-Okasa, who is the special rapporteur for contemporary forms of slavery. I mean, he in 2023 came out with a finding that there were 200,000 Malians living, quote, under the direct control of their masters. That's what there was a quote from the UN rapporteur. So it's not as if this has been hidden. But I mean, when did you last see a UN report on enslavement, contemporary enslavement, referred to? You do not see it. And if you get things like UNESCO, for example, which has done a great job on highlighting the transatlantic slave trade, see if you can find anything about current slavery. I don't think it exists.
You speak about UNESCO and you've spoken about United Nations generally. What about the Arab League?
The Arab League doesn't want to know. They literally don't talk about it. And there are 10 countries in Africa which are represented in the Arab League. The African Union has the same attitude. On May the 25th, it put out a really well-designed little series of tweets with cartoons talking about the anniversary of the founding of the Organization of African Union, which became the AU. And its theme for the year was justice for Africans and people of African descent. One of their little slides said transatlantic slave trade, colonialism, apartheid, systematic racism. And they said have caused immeasurable harm, all of which are true. But why only the transatlantic slave trade? And why nothing about today?
Again, is there a more sinister reason that this is taking place?
Yeah, well, I mean, because it is in the interests of the elites to do it. I mean, essentially, and there are, I mean, in parts of Africa, it is very deeply entrenched. And you'd have to take on whole societies in order to dismantle it. And in some places, it is beginning to happen in small ways. And there have been some extraordinarily brave women. There was a woman, I think, from Niger, who took her case of enslavement to the court, the African Court of Human Rights. And she actually won a case. But can you imagine, that's just one woman who had been owned and said she was owned. What a brave woman. But, you know, can you imagine if there are, say, 200,000 in Mali, imagine how many there are across the rest of Africa. There possibly are as many as 1 million Africans who are actually owned, sold, or inherited at the moment.
Wow, that is such a staggering number. And again, it's not spoken about. You talk about legal recourse. What do you think is the best way to highlight this if people are not wanting to talk about it?
Well, let's be honest. I mean, I'm a journalist. I am a writer. I'm not a politician. So, you know, it is for people in politics to really take up this case and make it an issue that they want to deal with. But they will only probably do it when they get public support and public opinion turns to it and demands that action is taken. It may happen. I mean, that's why I wrote this book and why I'm so furious about the issue, because, you know, the whole concentration is on what happened in the transatlantic slave trade, which is, you know, a perfectly legitimate discussion. But who is going to turn around and then say to the Saudis, well, actually, you guys have been doing this until the 1970s. How about opening your pockets? What about the Turks who, through the Ottoman Empire, imported people? I mean, more than 1 million, maybe more than 1.5 million people. India had slaves who were brought over as troops, as warriors. There's still a community in India today called the Sidhis, tens of thousands of whom live in very harsh environments in India and in Pakistan, and they are the residues of those military slaves who were brought over.
Martin, maybe this is an unfair question, but you worked for the BBC on the Africa Desk. Do you think, to kind of bring it back to hashtag Black Lives Matter, that because it's in Africa and because it is Black Lives, that there's no general care about what's happening?
Perhaps. You know, I think people are also very wary of raising issues which are not welcomed by African leaders. I mean, perhaps this goes back to our concern and unhappiness and the sense of guilt about colonialism. You know, in the 19s, I'm old enough to remember in the 1960s when Africa first won its freedom, and there was this huge feeling of celebration. And for many years, people didn't want to say a single bad word about any African leader or any African country. I mean, that has long passed now. But in a sense, there's a bit of that hangs over when you talk about the slave trade, because quite rightly, people say, well, what did you do? And I mean, for example, people point out that Britain paid out huge sums of money when slavery was abolished, but not one penny to the slaves. It all went to the people whose slaves had been freed because they were seen as property.
Yeah, I mean, in a funny way, though, if you think about the different attention different wars get. Like, we know that there's a genocide taking place in Sudan, but very little of the world's attention is on that. It's focused on Israel, Middle East, or the Ukraine. Yeah. Is this the same kind of mentality?
I think so. People are embarrassed. They don't know what to do. They don't know what to say. And it's, you know, the suffering in Sudan is so immense and has been going on for so many years. And you know, I remember visiting people in the far north of what is now South Sudan, was, of course, once part of Sudan, and meeting a group of young men. They were in their early, late 20s, who, you know, strong young guys. And I said to them, what did you do in the war? Because they fought a war for their independence. And they said, well, we walked. And I said, what do you mean you walked? Now, these people on Chad, on the far west of Sudan, they said, well, the Arabs came, and when we were about 13, we knew if we didn't leave the village, we would be killed. And so they walked. And I said, but where did you walk to? He said, well, we got about 20, 25 people together, and we walked to Ethiopia. That is like walking from London to Athens. They had no money, no guide, no indication of where to go. Some of them were eaten by hyenas. Some of them died of snake bite. Some of them died of starvation. None of them complained. It had been 5 days I'd been working with them. They'd never mentioned it. They wouldn't have mentioned it if I hadn't asked.
It's incredible. What has the response to your book been?
Well, it hasn't been published yet, so I can't tell you what the response is. The people who've read it have liked it. You know, some of the academics who've seen it have been pleased, but we will see. It comes out in on August the 28th, and you know, I just hope that people can get it in South Africa. We did offer it to a couple of South African publishers, but they decided not to go with it. Well, that's their decision. You know, what can
Again,
I say?
An interesting observation. I hadn't realized that I was one of the few to have already read it. Thank you for the manuscript. I now see how incredibly privileged I am to have it. So South Africa, I mean, again, is that part of the same thing that we've seen all along in not wanting to talk about it?
I'm afraid I can't speak on behalf of South African publishing industry. It may be simply that they don't think that it would sell. And I can't judge that. That is, until it hits the bookshops, we will not know what the impact will be. You know, I've written a number of books. As I said, the book I wrote about Dr. Abdurrahman, which was published by Jacana, I thought it was really, it's one of the books I'm most pleased with. Did it sell well? No, it didn't. Because it didn't kind of fit into the South African narrative, which is, you know, it was the ANC versus the National Party or whites. It's too complicated. And, you know, South Africans don't like complication, I'm afraid.
I can't imagine a book on the slave trade in South Africa would not resonate hugely with our human rights, our claims, certainly, of all human rights. Martin, thank you so much for joining me. It's been an absolutely fascinating discussion, and I really hope that your book does do well. And looking forward to seeing it actually coming onto the bookshelves. Even if we can't get it here easily, we can always get it, I'm sure, on Amazon and through other ways. There are other ways of doing it.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you for having me. It was a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you very much. That was Martin Plaut. He has just written a book that is about to come out soon, Unbroken Chains, A 5,000-Year History of African Enslavement.
Indeed.